It was fortunate that even in such fevered moments his eye was cool and quick. Something in a shop front went by him like a mere flash. Yet he went back to look at it. The shop was a popular greengrocer and fruiterer's, an array of goods set out in the open air and plainly ticketed with their names and prices. In the two most prominent compartments were two heaps of oranges and of nuts, respectively. On the heap of nuts lay a scrap of cardboard on which was written in bold blue chalk, "Best tangerine oranges, 2 a penny." On the oranges was the equally clear and exact description, "Finest Brazil nuts, 4d a pound." Monsieur Valentin looked at these two placards and fancied he had met this highly subtle form of humour before, and that somewhat recently. He drew the attention of the red-faced fruiterer, who was looking rather sullenly up and down the street, to this inaccuracy in his advertisements. The fruiterer said nothing, but sharply put each card into its proper place. The detective, leaning elegantly on his walking cane, continued to scrutinize the shop. At last he said, "Pray excuse my apparent irrelevance, my good sir, but I should like to ask you a question in experimental psychology and the association of ideas." The red-faced shopman regarded him with an eye of menace, but he continued gaily, swinging his cane. "Why," he pursued, "why are 2 tickets wrongly placed in a greengrocer's shop like a shovel hat that had come to London for a holiday? Or, in case I do not make myself clear, what is the mystical association which connects the idea of nuts marked as oranges with the idea of 2 clergymen, one tall and the other short?" The eyes of the tradesman stood out of his head like a snail's. He really seemed for an instant likely to fling himself upon the stranger. At last he stammered angrily, "I don't know what you have to do with it, but if you're one of their friends, you can tell them from me that I'll knock their silly heads off, parsons or no parsons, if they upset my apples again." "Indeed," asked the detective, with great sympathy, "did they upset your apples?"
"One of them did," said the heated shopman. "Rolled them all over the street. I'd have caught the fool but for having to pick them up."
"Which way did these parsons go?" asked Valentin.
"Up that second road on the left-hand side, and then across the square," said the other promptly.
"Thanks," replied Valentin, and vanished like a fairy. On the other side of the second square he found a policeman, and said, "This is urgent, constable. Have you seen 2 clergymen in shovel hats?" The policeman began to chuckle heavily.
"I have, sir, and if you asked me, one of them was drunk. He stood in the middle of the road that bewildered that—"
"Which way did they go?" snapped Valentin.
"They took one of them yellow buses over there," answered the man. "Them that go to Hampstead."
Valentin produced his official card and said very rapidly, "Call up 2 of your men to come with me in pursuit," and crossed the road with such contagious energy that the ponderous policeman was moved to almost agile obedience. In a minute and a half, the French detective was joined on the opposite pavement by an inspector and a man in plain clothes.
"Well, sir," began the former, with smiling importance, "and what may—"
Valentin pointed suddenly with his cane. "I'll tell you on the top of that omnibus," he said, and was darting and dodging across the tangle of the traffic. When all 3 sank panting on the top seats of the yellow vehicle, the inspector said, "We could go 4 times as quick in a taxi."
"Quite true," replied their leader placidly, "if we only had an idea of where we are going."
"Well, where are you going?" asked the other, staring. Valentin smoked frowningly for a few seconds. Then, removing his cigarette, he said, "If you know what a man's doing, get in front of him. But if you want to guess what he's doing, keep behind him. Stray when he strays, stop when he stops, travel as slowly as he. Then you may see what he saw and may act as he acted. All we can do is to keep our eyes skinned for a queer thing."
"What sort of queer thing do you mean?" asked the inspector.
"Any sort of queer thing," answered Valentin, and relapsed into obstinate silence. The yellow omnibus crawled up the northern roads for what seemed like hours on end. The great detective would not explain further, and perhaps his assistants felt a silent and growing doubt of his errand. Perhaps, also, they felt a silent and growing desire for lunch, for the hours crept long past the normal luncheon hour,
and the long rows of the North London suburbs seemed to shoot out into length after length like an infernal telescope. It was one of those journeys on which a man perpetually feels that now at last he must have come to the end of the universe, and then finds he has only come to the beginning of Tufnell Park. London died away in draggled taverns and dreary scrubs, and then was unaccountably born again in blazing high streets and blatant hotels. It was like passing through 13 separate vulgar cities, all just touching each other. But though the winter twilight was already threatening the road ahead of them, the Parisian detective still sat silent and watchful, eyeing the frontage of the streets that slid by on either side. By the time they had left Camden Town behind, the policemen were nearly asleep. At least they gave something like a jump as Valentine leapt erect, struck a hand on each man's shoulder, and shouted to the driver to stop. They tumbled down the steps into the road without realizing why they had been dislodged. When they looked round for enlightenment, they found Valentine triumphantly pointing his finger towards a window on the left side of the road. It was a large window, forming part of the long façade of a gilt and palatial public house. It was the part reserved for respectable dining, and labelled restaurant. This window, like all the rest along the frontage of the hotel, was of frosted and figured glass, but in the middle of it was a big black smash like a star in the ice. "Our cue at last," cried Valentine, waving his stick, "the place with the broken window."
"What window? What cue?" asked his principal assistant. "Why, what proof is there that this has anything to do with them?"
Valentine almost broke his bamboo stick with rage.
"Proof?" he cried. "Good God, the man is looking for proof. Why, of course, the chances are 20 to 1 that it has nothing to do with them. But what else can we do? Don't you see we must either follow one wild possibility or else go home to bed?" He banged his way into the restaurant, followed by his companions, and they were soon seated at the late luncheon at the little table, and looked at the star of smashed glass from the inside. Not that it was very informative to them even then.
"Got your window broken, I see," said Valentine to the waiter as he paid the bill.
"Yes, sir," answered the attendant, bending busily over the change, to which Valentine silently added an enormous tip. The waiter straightened himself with mild but unmistakable animation.
"Ah, yes, sir," he said. "Very odd thing, that, sir."
"Indeed? Tell us about it," said the detective with careless curiosity.
"Well, two gents in black came in," said the waiter. "Two of those foreign parsons that are running about. They had a cheap and quiet little lunch, and one of them paid for it, and went out. The other was just going out to join him when I looked at my change again and found he'd paid me more than 3 times too much. 'Here,' I says to the chap, who was nearly out of the door, 'you've paid too much.' 'Oh,' he says, very cool, 'have we?' 'Yes,' I says, and picks up the bill to show him. Well, that was a knockout."
"What do you mean?" asked his interlocutor.
"Well, I'd have sworn on 7 Bibles that I've put 4 S on that bill, but now I said I'd put 14 S, as plain as paint."
"Well," cried Valentine, moving slowly, but with burning eyes. "And then?"
"The parson at the door, he says all serene, 'Sorry to confuse your accounts, but it'll pay for the window.'
'What window?' I says.
"The one I'm going to break," he says, "and smash that blessed pane with his umbrella.